before I can respond. Man, I feel bad for him. Can't be easy dealing with a divorce at the start of the season. It's still preseason, though, so maybe he'll get his head on straight before October. Really? Nobody has the balls to tag that? Well, I will. A smug voice drawls from the other side of the room. The girl is smoking, like fuckable to a whole other level. Quit it with that, someone else mutters. Lemming hears you and you'll have his fist in your jaw. Our captain Luco warns, referring to our other teammate who's also going through a breakup right now. X's are off limits, newbie. The newbie, Will O'Connor, just scoffs. I'm not going to keep my mouth shut just because of some archaic bro code. I fucked two of my teammates' exes in Nashville, and look, he pats his chiseled jaw. Still in one piece. Yeah, then why aren't you still in Nashville? I want to call out. But I keep my trap shut because I've already had several run-ins with the fucker, and they all almost ended with my clocking him a good one. Me, a pacifist. I don't hit peeps off the ice. I don't even think about hitting them. But this guy, O'Connor is young, cocky, and a total pain in the ass. He says shit without thinking, and that's gonna get him in big trouble one day. Hell, it already has. There's a reason he keeps getting traded, and it's not because his former teams are collecting draft picks. Back me up, Riley, O'Connor says when he catches my eye. Lemming's X, you'd tap that, right? Nah, I like my nose where it is, on my pretty face. The dark-haired newbie rolls his eyes. Whatever, you guys are all pussies. He strides past and ducks into the showers. Luco and I exchange a grim look. Trouble, our captain murmurs. Got a lot of growing up to do, that one. Keep an eye on him, will ya? Damn, I knew I shouldn't have accepted that assistant captain patch. Seems like old captain my captain is always giving me the shit tasks. I make my way to the showers, smack Wesley's ass as I come up beside him, and dunk my head under the hot spray. O'Connor is across the steam-filled space, soaping up his dick and ignoring everyone. I guess he's pissed that nobody wants to tag-team Lemming's ex with him. Christ, I hope he doesn't make a move. Claire and my teammate were together for 2 years before she left him. Lemming will shit a brick if our newest man-whore puts his grubby hands on her. What are we having for din-din tonight? I ask Wes. One of the perks of being his upstairs neighbor is that I never have to eat alone. All I gotta do is ride the elevator down 5 floors and I've got 2 willing dinner companions waiting for me. Well, maybe they're not always willing. Sometimes they're reluctant. Sometimes they try to kick me out. But it's all in good fun. Wes and Jamie would cry buckets if I stopped being their friend. You're on your own tonight, he tells me. Canning and I have plans. I brighten. I love plans. Where are we going? He rinses the shampoo out of his hair, then glances over. You're going home, he says dryly, and we're going to play Moving Men. Sounds kinky, he snickers. I wish. If anything, it'll be a total pain in the ass. Have you ever tried lugging boxes through one of those super narrow dormitory hallways? Dormitory? I wrinkle my forehead as I drag the bar of soap over my body. What, you friends with a college freshman or something? Sort of. Jess is starting nursing school this week, so... Jess? I interrupt. Which Jess is this? I only know one, but she can't be in Toronto. I would have sensed a disturbance in the force. A hot, sassy, blonde disturbance. My favorite sister-in-law? Wesley snorts. She just got off the waiting list at Toronto Nursing College. Big stuff. She got the call 4 days ago, had to sell her car and pack some things into a few cartons, quick-like. It's a better school than the community college where she was supposed to start next week. Oh, that's cool, I hear myself say. But it isn't really. After the wedding, Jess went full-on Amish and shunned me. We were totally going to bone down in June. She wanted it, like wanted it bad. I made her come so hard she couldn't move for fuck's sake. And then she bailed on me. Gave me the key to her apartment and never came home that night. I couldn't stick around the next morning because I had a flight to catch, and my ma would have murdered me if I didn't make it home on time. It was my sister's birthday. Nobody misses a Riley birthday and lives to tell about it. I'd texted Jess from the plane. She didn't text back. I'd texted her throughout the summer. She didn't text back, not even when I sent her the best dick pic ever taken. I experimented with lighting in order to emphasize both length and girth. She couldn't be bothered to comment on how great Snake Riley looked. Wesley shuts off the faucet. Anyway, we're going to grab dinner in Jess's new neighborhood. I'd invite you, but I'm not sure how long the move will take, and I don't want you waiting around. I can help with the move, I almost say, but I bite my tongue. It's rare, but sometimes I am able to control my verbal impulses. Jess obviously doesn't want me around, otherwise she would have told me herself that she was moving to Toronto for nursing school. Whistling to himself, Wesley towels off. I shut off the water too, but I'm moving slowly, trying to process this turn of events. You have a sister in Toronto, Wesley? O'Connor says from underneath the towel he's using to dry his hair. Is she hot? Can I have her number? Wes growls. Touch Jess and die. You hear me? O'Connor chuckles and the sound climbs up my throat like bile. Somehow fists are clenched at my sides. Jess and I aren't together and we never will be. And yet I feel like grinding the newbie into dust just for joking about calling her. Weird. Must be time for dinner.
One butt cheek. Jess. I'm freaking out. But who wouldn't be, right? 5 days ago, I was moving back into my parents' house to save money and enrolling in a community college nursing program. It wasn't ideal, but I was determined to do whatever it took. Then I got the call. The Toronto phone number didn't clue me in because that's where Jamie and Wes live. I came this close to answering the phone with, "What's up, Jamester?" Some benevolent force in the universe caused me to answer, "Hello," like a normal person. And a few seconds later, I heard something that changed my life. There's a place for you here in Toronto. Suddenly, I was no longer slumming in the only local program that had a last-minute spot for me, but flying out to a top-notch nursing program in a new city, in a different country. I thought that I'd be easing into this whole back-to-school thing. It's been 5 years since I took notes or studied for a quiz. Frankly, I was already terrified, and that was before I won a probationary scholarship that requires me to get good grades. If I do poorly, I'll lose the funding. So, here I am in this tiny room in a cinderblock dormitory with its two twin beds and two tiny desks. At 26, I'm starting over. I tuck my pillow into its pillowcase and lay it on the bed as my brother carries the last bag through the door. "This is it?" Jamie asks, smiling. "I thought we'd be here for hours." "Not so much. All I'd brought to Toronto were two suitcases full of clothes, a box of reference books, my laptop, my teddy bear, and an empty bank account." "I still appreciate the help," I tell him. "Moral support is just as important as arm strength today, and I'm not afraid to admit it."
"Your roommate sure is organized,"
Jamie remarks, peeking at the books lined up on the other desk. There are at least 20 important-looking medical texts.
"What's radiopharmacology?"
I give a whole body shiver. "I'll have to get back to you," he chuckles.
"Let's eat dinner. Wes is putting some more change in the meter. Want to scope out the falafel joint we saw two blocks down?"
"That place is disgusting," someone sneers from the doorway. Jamie and I both turn to see an angular, dark-haired girl stride into the room. She marches over to the desk and slaps four more textbooks onto its surface. "Hi," I squeak. "I'm Jess Canning, and this is my brother Jamie." The thin creature turns her face my way, the lenses of her narrow glasses glinting in the fluorescent light. "Violet Smith, pleasure to meet you." Something about the way the girl said pleasure makes me wonder if she knows what that word means. "I'm a first-year nursing student," I tell her, all the while comparing our two desks. Mine has only two postcards propped up on the book ledge. One is a picture of J.J. Watt, which my brothers insist is blasphemous because I'm not allowed to root for a non-niner. But I don't care because he's hot. The other reads, "Keep calm and pour the wine." Hers looks like a medical school bookstore. "I'm a first year too," she says with a shrug. "Let's start with some ground rules, shall we? I need quiet time between 6 p.m. and 6 a.m. No music, no speaking. Those are the really valuable study hours, and we're going to need to hit the books hard just to stay afloat the first trimester. Oh, and no food in the room, because this building has had trouble with ants. Did she just say 6 p.m.? And on my budget, granola bars at my desk are likely to be a main staple of my diet. Do you have anything to add? She prompts. I look to my brother for help, but he's staring at Violet in fascination. I'll let you know, I finally say, the urge to flee overtaking me. Jamie, we were on our way out.
Right.
He gives me a salute, but I'm already aiming at the door.
Jesse, don't forget your key card. Don't want to climb through the window on your first night, like you did at State.
Jesus. Violet's lip curls. I grab the card off the bed where I'd left it and eject from the room like a fighter pilot whose jet has taken fire. An hour later, I've almost calmed down. The vodka in my bloodstream has helped. Jamie, Wes, and I just finished eating at Tonic, a slick new restaurant that's recently opened in their neighborhood. I couldn't afford the place, but Wes insisted on buying dinner to welcome me to Toronto. We'd meant to investigate the neighborhood around my new school, but I didn't object to the change of plans when Wes said he was in the mood for something nicer. The food had been awesome, too. Now, as I step outside and feel the breeze off Lake Ontario brushing my face, I can almost convince myself that I'm on a mini vacation in a pretty city. Then I look up the street toward the streetcar stop and feel a new twinge of trepidation.
Aw, Jesse.
Wes grabs my shoulders and hugs me.
It's going to be okay. The scary roommate probably has first aid jitters, too.
You didn't meet her, I point out.
She was a piece of work, my brother agrees. But so what? Even if she wins a Nobel Prize by the second week of school, it doesn't mean you won't do well. Of course she'll do well,
Wes scoffs, releasing me from the hug.
She's a Canning, and Cannings are smart. They're smart enough to drink a beer with me right now and watch the first Monday night football of the season. Your Niners are playing.
I hesitate. I'd planned to reread the schedule for the first week of school and memorize the campus map. But their apartment is just a few steps away. The semester hasn't even started yet, and my team is playing. All right, I'm in. A few minutes later, I'm holding a beer and wondering where to sit. It shouldn't be a tricky question. Wes and Jamie have claimed opposite ends of the sofa, sitting sideways with their legs casually intertwined. All their focus is on the screen. The screen I can't see from the counter stool where I'm perched right now.
Shit,
my brother groans, pointing his beer at the screen.
Jesse, do you believe this?
I walk behind the couch to catch the replay of the interception our QB shouldn't have thrown. Nobody was open, damn it. He should have just tossed the ball out of bounds. Oh, man, that is just wrong. It's a good game. My whole family loves football. It's our thing. I ruffle Jamie's hair to console him over that awful play.
Sit down,
my brother says, pointing at the obvious piece of furniture, the one I've been avoiding since I crossed their threshold.
The massage chair is awesome, he adds.
Right. I approach the chair the way I might approach a bloody crime scene, with both curiosity and discomfort. It still looks brand new, with buttery leather upholstery and a deep seat.
Something wrong?
Jamie asks. He's watching me like I've lost my mind. Not a thing. I turn and sit on the edge of the chair. Actually, sit isn't the right word. I perch one butt cheek on the edge of the cushion, but the memory comes back anyway. I was sleep-deprived on that March day and really stressed out. I'd taken the red-eye from San Francisco to Toronto to take care of Jamie the first time he'd been released from the hospital. When I'd knocked on the apartment door, Blake Riley had answered. He and I had clashed immediately, fighting over every little thing. Who would get Jamie's glass of water? What we'd feed him for lunch? And the whole time I was all too aware of how gorgeous he was and how much space his muscular body took up in the room. It was too distracting, and I didn't like it. I asked him to leave, but he refused. That dickhead. After I tucked Jamie into bed to sleep off his illness, things got a little weird. I sat down on the couch feeling teary. I was worried for Jamie and anxious about a bunch of things in my life. My sister Tammy had just had a new baby. I'd just broken up with my boyfriend. And only a few weeks into my new career, I was already having second thoughts about party planning. Tired and vulnerable, I'd sat there trying to disguise my unhappiness, surreptitiously wiping my eyes on the sleeve of my t-shirt. Blake was on to me, though. And that dude is a lot like a big drooly dog. Doesn't matter if he just met you. He wants to lick your face and hump your leg. 3 seconds after I started crying, he was clucking over me, bringing me a cup of water and dabbing my face with tissues. When that didn't work, he picked me up like I weighed as much as a throw pillow and scooped me into his lap.
"Shh," he'd said. "J-Bomb is gonna be fine. He's tough."
I sniffled and pulled myself together. But the all-nighter I'd pulled to get to Toronto took its toll and made me unusually emotional. I told Blake all my problems, how I'd broken up with Raven because he'd been pushing for us to move in together, and I couldn't see that ever happening. How my career choices were always wrong.
"You're a big old ball of stress, Jesse," he'd informed me. "I have just the cure."
"You do?"
"Scotch whiskey."
As it happened, accepting a single tumbler of single malt was a major tactical error. I drank and watched a movie with Blake. I got sleepier and even more sentimental. Blake went to check on Jamie, returning to tell me that my brother was sleeping like a baby. "He was such a cute baby," I'd hiccuped into my glass. "I'll never have babies, because I can't stick with a man for more than 10 seconds. The tears began to leak from my eyes again.
"Shh,"
Blake said again.
"Time to call in the big guns."
"What?"
"Try this," he'd said,
scooping me into the air. We landed a moment later on the massage chair. It was built for one, but Blake didn't care. He reclined in the usual fashion, positioning me on his lap.
"Here we go,"
he said, his voice smokier than I wished it was. There was a click, and then the chair began to hum.
"Now that's what I'm talking about,"
he drawled. It was different. A wave of harmony swept down my frame. Big hands landed on my shoulders and began to massage me.
"Ah,"
I moaned.
"I know, right? I think I need one of these in every room of my apartment."
He kissed the back of my head, and it didn't even seem weird. My tired, tipsy eyes flickered over to the TV, where the movie we'd put on had advanced to a makeout session between the action hero and the starlet he was trying to protect from the mob. He pushed her down on the bed and climbed on her body.
"Ugh,"
Blake grunted from behind me. He was watching the movie, too. That's when I realized his lap had firmed up a lot. Sitting here again 6 months later, my memory of that night seems a little questionable, because the hard length that had been pressing against me in the chair had been so ridiculously sizable that it almost seemed impossible. From that moment on, I could think of nothing else. In fact, I'd arched my back a little just to see if it would still be there when I returned. As I close my eyes to try to sink deeper into the memory, Jamie's apartment door flies open, hitting the wall with a bang.
"Wes me,"
Blake calls out.
"What you watching?"
I leap to my feet as if the massage chair had just delivered an electric shock. Blake stops, his body freezing into position in the doorway.
"J-Babe, welcome to Toronto."
"Thanks," I squeak. A glance at my brother and his husband calms me only a little. The game is back on, so they haven't noticed my odd behavior. And Blake's presence is so routine that they seem not to have registered him either. Blake stomps into the kitchen to toss the six-pack he's brought onto the counter. He takes one of the beers, pops off the top, and then crosses the room again. I'm still standing in front of the chair like a dork. He nudges me aside. Then he sits down in the chair, reaches down, and slips the switch. The hum of the chair makes goosebumps rise all over my body. Blake looks up at me, an evil glint in his eye. Then he pats his massive thigh.
There's room right here.
Several parts of my body spasm at once, including my uncooperative mouth.
Grach,
I say as panic sets in. I lift my beer bottle to my lips and drain it. When I check his face again, he's watching me lick my lips, his lust-filled gaze aiming like a laser pointer at me.
I gotta go,
I stammer.
Aw, but I just got here.
All the more reason to go. I turn to my brother. I have class at 9 tomorrow. I should really get a good night's sleep, you know, so I'm bright and bushy-tailed for my first day of school. I give a half-hearted fist pump. Yay, school! Jamie stands up.
You're going to do great, Jesse.
He slings an arm around my shoulder.
Come on, I'll walk you to the streetcar stop.
Blake is on his feet in a heartbeat.
No need. I can drive you.
No way. No way! Shit, did I say that out loud? At Blake's hurt expression, and Jamie and Wes's confused ones, I hasten to add, I'll be fine taking public transit. I don't want to put you out. The seductive look he gives me says I can put him anywhere I want, any time, any place. Luckily, Jamie and Wes don't see it, because they're too busy looking at me.
I'd feel better if Blake drove you back to the dorm, Jamie admits. You're not used to the transit system here yet, and it's late.
Blake walks over and claps Jamie's back.
No worries, J-Bomb. I'll make sure J-Babe gets home safe. I'll even walk her all the way to her door.
He brightens.
We can do a buddy system thing, holding hands and all that so we don't get separated.
I swallow a scream. Don't even think about holding my hand, I grumble. But fine, if you're serious, then let's go. He makes a grand gesture toward the door.
After you, m'lady.
A fox, not a dog. Blake. Jesus, it's just a ride home, old yeller. I'm not taking you out back to shoot you. Jess glares at me from the passenger seat. Did you just call me old? Grinning, I start the engine and reverse out of the underground parking spot. So, it's okay to call you a dog, but it's not cool if I say you're old? Because I know I'm not a dog, she says haughtily. She winks at me. I'm a fox. Hell yeah, she is. It was damn impossible to keep my tongue inside my mouth when I walked into Westmee's place and saw Jess Canning standing there in her tight jeans and low-cut tank. Her body is out of this fucking world. But you think you're old? I prompt. I am old. Her expression darkens again, and I kind of wish I hadn't revisited the age comment. I'm a 26-year-old freshman. I feel ancient. Ah, honey, you're not ancient. I give her a very slow, very pointed once-over, making sure to stare extra long at the delectable tits that are practically pouring out of her top. You're the hottest freshman I know. Instead of thanking me, she shifts her gaze out the window. I can see the pout of her lips and the nervous set of her profile. This car is such a gas guzzler, she mutters. Do you really need to drive this macho-mobile? Seriously? At 6'5 and 250 pounds, I don't fit comfortably in many vehicles. Even this Hummer is a wee bit cramped for my rockin' physique. Have you seen me? Oh, wait, you have. I give her a wink and she blushes. My macho-mobile emerges from the underground and I steer onto the main street. Admittedly, the Hummy is like 10 feet taller than all the other vehicles on the road. I like that, though. Makes me feel like a badass. The hot blonde next to me, however, she makes me feel all of 2 feet tall. Seriously, she's not good for my ego, this one. You should have told me you were moving to the T-Dot. It was last minute, she answers without looking over. So, takes all of a second to shoot a text.
Why would I do that?
Because we're friends?
Are we?
I smirk at her. Would you rather I said former lovers or maybe soon to be lovers again?
She smirks back. In your dreams.
Fuck yes, absolutely in my dreams. The wet kind. I reach over and cover her knee with my palm. How about we make those dreams a reality?
Jess flicks my hand away. Do you ever give up?
I play hockey.
I didn't ask what sport you play.
That's the answer, though. Do I give up? Of course not. I'm a hockey player.
She makes an unflattering noise under her breath, then jerks when the cup holder starts vibrating, or rather when my phone makes it vibrate.
Check that for me, will you?
I ask, as I execute a miraculous lane change without smashing into any other cars. This Hummer wasn't designed for the narrow streets of downtown Toronto. It's a text from Brenna.
Jess puts on a high-pitched voice.
Blakey, I need that recipe for your famous Rippin' Riley Sangria. My sister doesn't sound like that at all, but Jess doesn't give me the chance to point that out. She just grumbles something else under her breath.
What was that?
I ask. Nothing. The light at the intersection turns amber and I slam my foot on the brakes harder than necessary, mostly because I want to stretch my arm out and across Jess's chest to protect her from such an abrupt stop.
An intentionally abrupt stop, but whatever.
Oh my God, did you just cop a feel? She sputters.
Of course.
Blake,
I glance over. What is it, baby?
Aggravation flares in her brown eyes. Don't call me baby.
Okay, J-Babe.
Don't call me that either. She thrusts both hands through her hair. You know what? Pull over after this light.
My dick does a happy dance against my zipper. That's what I'm talking about.
Not for that, she screeches. We... She takes a deep breath. She seems to do that a lot when I'm around.
I make her breathless.
We need to get a few things straight.
Shit, I don't like the sound of that.
But I still do what she asks, pulling over the moment I see an empty stretch of curb. It's a fire zone, so I leave the engine running in case we need to drive away quick fast. Jess starts saying ridiculous things the moment the car comes to a stop. Here's the situation, Blake. We're not going out. We're not having sex again. We're not sexting or flirting or playing these weird games. We're not anything, okay?
Are you playing hard to get?
I'm genuinely asking because I'm genuinely not sure.
No, I'm not.
My phone buzzes again.
Hold that thought.
I cut in because I see my sister's name on the screen. Bethy this time, reminding me that Brenna's baby shower is coming up. Not that I'd forgotten. I'm about to become an uncle for the first time, and I'm totally pumped about it. My fingers are too big for this touchscreen, so it takes longer than it should for me to text back a quick,
duh, I'll be there with bells on.
Are you done? Jess's tone is lined with impatience.
Sorry.
I drop the phone in the cup holder. She takes another breath. Look, I'm sorry I led you on at Jamie's wedding. I shouldn't have let you, do stuff to me. It was good.
I do good work,
I say with a nod. But it was a mistake.
Giving you orgasms is a mistake?
Yes, it is. Was. I won't be falling into bed with you again, okay? I'm not in the right headspace to sleep with anyone right now. I'm starting a new school program. I'm in a new city. I don't know my way around yet. I need to buckle down and be serious for once in my life. And you, Blake, are not...
I'm not what? What's so bad about hooking up with me again?
I challenge, just as my phone buzzes for a third time. Oh my God, who is it now? Jess snatches it from the cup holder, her lips tightening as she reads the message. Britt wants to know if she can get an extra ticket for the next home game so she can bring her sorority sister Cassandra. Growling, she slaps the phone in my hand. That's why I won't hook up with you again. Three different chicks have texted you in the span of 10 minutes. Three.
I open my mouth to object, but she cuts me off again.
You're a player, Blake. You're hands down the least serious person I've ever met in my life. You're fun, I'll give you that. But fun is the last thing I need at the moment. All I want to do is study my ass off and impress my instructors and keep my scholarship. Her little speech makes me bristle. Yeah, I get it. I'm fun. I like to laugh. I like to fuck. And why the hell not? Life is too damn short and I want to enjoy every second that I have on this awesome planet. I want good food and fast hockey and hot girls and even hotter orgasms. I tried the serious thing once before. I almost got married and look where that almost got me. Serious is overrated. Without a word, I move the gear shift and pull away from the curb. What, you're mad at me now? Just because I was honest?
Honest? I spare her a brief smug look. That wasn't honesty, honey. That was you making excuses because you're too freaked out by how much you want me. And P.S., all those chicks who just texted, they're my sisters, so you can retract those jealous Jesse claws.
Another glance reveals her expression to be a combo of frustration and sheepishness.
Your sisters?
She echoes dumbly.
Yep, all three of them.
Brenna, Beth, Britt, and Blake. Did your parents stop watching Sesame Street after the letter B and didn't realize there was more to the alphabet?
I snicker. That's a good one. Remind me to tell it to my mom next time I see her.
I turn left onto Jesse's new street, and she directs me to a low-rise on our right.
Just park here, she says. This is my dorm.
I give the building a quick appraisal. It's made of red brick and looks bland as hell, but this area is safe and clean, so I approve.
I'll walk you inside.
I move to flick the ignition.
No, it's okay.
She reaches for the door handle, then hesitates. With a sigh, she offers me a rueful look.
I'm sorry. That stuff I said about us not being friends? We are friends. You're a good guy, Blake, seriously. Now that I'm living in Toronto, I know we'll probably end up seeing a lot of each other because of Wes and my brother. But it's not going to lead to any sexy times, okay? I meant it when I said I don't have time for that.
She blows out a tired breath.
I need to focus. I really, really need to focus.
I have a stress chest on my hands. That's what's really happening here. I've been accused of having a bulldozer approach, but even I know to not push a chick who's so clearly on the ledge. I'll have to de-stress her, obviously. Just not tonight.
It's fine, I assure her. You go ahead and focus on what you need to focus on.
She eyes me suspiciously.
Really? Uh-huh. Focus away.
Her hand moves to the door handle again.
Oh, one other thing, I say before she can go. A minor thing, really, but we gotta be on the same page, right? I mean, I like hearing someone tell me when I'm wrong. Constructive criticism, you know?
What the heck are you talking about? Who's wrong about what?
You? About, well, everything.
I grin at her.
We're way more than friends, Jesse.
Blake.
She sounds exasperated.
But no worries, I finish breezily. I'll just sit tight until you figure that out.
Jesus. Blake.
She hasn't figured it out yet. I was hoping it wouldn't take long for Jess to acknowledge to herself how hot she is for me. A day, maybe day and a half, seems to be the right amount of time for such an easy thing to figure out. But it's been 4 days since I dropped her off. She hasn't called or texted. I told her I'd sit tight, so that's what I'm doing. I'd way rather be naked with her at the moment, but you can't win every game in the third period, right? Sometimes it goes to overtime. Jess and I are in overtime right now, skating around each other until one of us scores. Except in this case, we both score. Which, I guess, ends in another tie and another OT period? Fuck. My thoughts are getting away from me, and I don't like it. I try not to think deep thoughts if I can help it. The lake outside my apartment window looks a little purple in the sunset. The lights of Toronto shimmer above the waterline. It's a Tuesday evening. There's no game tonight, and I'm hanging around the old apartment considering my options. My place is awesome, but it's a little too quiet at the moment. There are probably a few of my teammates drinking down at Sticks and Stones, our favorite bar. I could head over there for a couple of beers. There's always a good time. In fact, I dig out my phone to check for messages. The guys usually let me know where they're drinking on our nights off. My shoulders tense when I see the screen. Someone has left me a message, all right, but it's not the name I was hoping to see. Not by a long shot. Fuck. Carrying the phone over to my brand new chair, I sit down and lever my feet into the air. Then I use the clicker to dial up a whole body massage and press start. I lean back as the chair begins to do its thing. The rollers kneading my lower back and calves first. Only when the relaxing powers of the world's best chair have kicked in do I dare press play on the voicemail message.
Hi, Blake,
a soft, familiar voice says into my ear.
It's Molly.
Pity. There goes the possibility that she'd butt-dialed me by accident. I brace myself.
I was hoping we could go out for coffee,
she says timidly.
No can do,
I announce to nobody in particular. We need to catch up, okay? I convinced my firm to relocate me to Toronto for good.
No,
I yell. So we're going to see each other from time to time. I'll be at your sister's shower next weekend. Let's not be awkward, okay? I want to see you and hear what's new. It would be good for us to be friends again.
That's it. That's all I can take. I hit delete on the voicemail and drop my phone on the rug.
The chair does its level best, rolling its tireless mechanical hands over my back and then down past my ass. But no massage chair in the world could overpower the bad news I just received. I'm good at staying upbeat. The team psychologist loves me because I can always put the last game behind me and focus on the next challenge coming down the road. But when there are toxic people in your life, it's trickier. I need some non-toxic people quick. With a flick of my wrist, I shut off the chair and then bounce to my feet. It only takes me a couple of minutes to ride the elevator down a few floors and pound on Westmee's door. There's a muted grumble and a chuckle, too. Sounds like I interrupted a makeout session on the couch. Oops.
I'll come back later, I tell the door.
It's okay, Jamie's voice says, coming closer. We were going to order some dinner anyway. The door opens, revealing a tousled-looking Jamie. Wes is headed for the kitchen, where he pulls a third wine glass out of the cupboard and pours for me without even asking first. Did I mention how much I love this man?
What are you ordering?
I ask. How do you feel about Indian? Jamie suggests.
Indian food always makes Blake Riley smiley,
I answer.
I'll buy.
It's usually my treat when we order in because I eat Jamie's cooking a few times a week. He told me he buys extra of everything because he knows I'll probably turn up. And when you don't, I have leftovers for lunch, he explained. Wes hands me a glass of wine.
You want your usual?
He asks, pulling out his phone.
Yeah, and let's get the samosas, too. I'm starved.
Bad news makes me hungry. I sit down in their massage chair, which is identical to my massage chair. This leaves the whole couch for Wes-me. They sit at opposite ends, but Wes puts his feet on Jamie's lap. Jamie's eyes are on the TV screen, where some sports highlights are playing, but his hands unconsciously attach themselves to Wes's left foot, and he begins to stroke the arch with his thumbs. Watching, I can almost feel how awesome that must be. The pressure just right against muscles tired from today's brutal morning practice. I could use a massage. Maybe I'll book one tomorrow with a team therapist. Wes gives me a frown.
You okay?
Fuck, I must have been staring.
Sure, of course I'm okay. Why wouldn't I be?
Well, Jamie chews his lip thoughtfully. Got any hot dates lined up? You just seem a little lonely lately.
Lonely? I don't get lonely.
Maybe I'm at loose ends a little bit right now, but it's only because our season hasn't really started up again. That, and Jess Canning still refuses to accept the inevitable. Wes and Jamie exchange a glance that irks me. Jesus. Just because a guy spends a lot of time being the third wheel to the happiest couple alive doesn't mean he's lonely. That's ridiculous.
Wanna watch some Sense8?
I suggest, changing the subject.
We're almost to the one with that orgy scene that everybody's talking about.
Sure, buddy, Wes says kindly.
Cue it up.
He tosses me the clicker and then slides his other foot into Jamie's welcoming hands. I dial up our latest show and sit back to watch. I put the massage chair on the quiet setting and relax into its comfy, robotic embrace.
And everything is just great.
Of course it is.
The leader of the alien race. 1 month later. Jess. I'm freaking out. Again. This isn't me either. I'm not a worrier. Or I didn't used to be. I'm a California girl, damn it. We're chill. We take each day as it comes and make the best of it. But a month into nursing school, I'm not any more relaxed than I was on day one. It's still hard. And I still feel like an alien dropped onto a planet where everyone else has a photographic memory and speaks Latin with great fluency. The leader of the alien race is Violet Smith. She's squinting at me right now, in fact, as I lean against a hallway wall in the pediatric oncology ward at the hospital. My evil roommate can tell, that I'm not paying enough attention to Nurse Haley, our instructor. But I need a moment to compose myself, because around the corner, there's a playroom for patients on the pediatric oncology ward. I am about to come face to face with kids fighting cancer. My classmates are all bent over their clipboards, taking notes as the instructor speaks. The Play-Doh is non-toxic, but we still don't want anyone eating it. Nurse Haley smiles at us. So feel free to shut that down right away. And if you have any trouble with the rubber band looms, I'm pretty much an expert now. And just have fun with this. Interacting with the kids comes first. And then when you're feeling settled, that's when I want you to start to check off the observations we've been working on in the classroom with regard to patient assessment. Since this is a stealthy assessment, you don't need to ask the patient any questions. But even without verbal queries, you should be able to learn things from the patient's movements, skin tone, audible breath sounds, etc. I clutch my bag of Play-Doh and follow the rest of the class into the big room. It looks like the set of a Nickelodeon show. Bright furniture in interesting shapes. A wall painted to resemble the facade of a castle. There are tables and chairs and a TV playing an animated movie. It's paradise, until you look a little closer. A dozen heads turn in our direction as we enter. The kids are all shapes and sizes, but my worried gaze trips over a small, bald head, and then another. One little girl, she's wearing a glittery t-shirt that says Girl Power on the front, is so thin that it hurts to look at her. She smiles, though, and her front teeth are missing. I want to bolt from the room. My hesitation costs me. The other nursing students scatter like heat-seeking missiles. They each pick a child and sit right down to do their thing. Seconds later, they're bonding already. I look frantically around, but all the kids have been taken. My evil roommate smirks at me over the top of the painfully thin little girl's head. For the last 4 weeks, she's enjoyed my discomfort. Whenever I have to ask her a question, when my notes aren't clear enough or when I just don't understand something, it makes her entire week. Now I'm standing here in the center of the room, uncertain. My eyes sweep one more time, finding only unaccompanied adults around the edges of the space. Nurses in their bunny rabbit pediatric scrubs, and a parent or two, and a teenager. Oh, she's sitting at a table alone, stabbing angrily at her knitting. Her fingers are white sticks against the dark yarn. She's wearing a scarf tied around her scalp, and there's a dark circle under each of her eyes, and a scowl on her face. I wander over, feeling tentative. Don't want any, she mutters as I approach. Well, I sit across the table from her anyway. I'm here to force you to make a Play-Doh jack-o'-lantern with me. My entire semester's grade is riding on this, so make it good. She looks up quickly, confusion and scorn mixed together on her face. What the fuck? Joking, I sputter, the tension getting to me. I actually giggle. Jeez. For a split second, something like humor crosses her face. Then the scowl returns. You're a nursing student? Yup. Pay close attention when they teach you to drop blood, because most of the nurses here suck at it. Big time. I look like a junkie with track marks because none of them can find a damn vein. She shows me her forearm, where I see some nasty bruising. Ouch. I'm sorry. My sympathy doesn't go very far with her. Whatever. I'm having a spinal tap tomorrow. That's 10 times worse. She squints at her knitting and then suddenly throws it down. My mother says that knitting is relaxing. But this ribbing is all wrong, and I just want to stab someone with the needles. Given the look on her face, I think she's mere seconds away from following through with that threat. I know ribbing, I say quickly. What's the problem? Really? For the first time since I sat down, she looks hopeful, and the change of expression takes years off her gaunt face. Why do I have all these extra loops? She passes her knitting to me. And it's a total wreck. I say, taking care to find the right words. The regular stockinette stitch looks great. She's made a bunch of stripes, burgundy and mustard colored. Thank you. But the ribbing has some issues. It's a disaster. I think I know why. When you switch between knit and purl, you have to move the yarn before you take the stitch. Those extra loops happen when the yarn is in the wrong place. When you're going to knit next, it needs to be in back, and when you're going to purl, it has to be in front. Oh, she says slowly. Can you show me? Sure, but we're fixing this, right? Can it even be fixed? Anything can be fixed. I grab the stitches and slide the whole thing off the needle. With a gasp, she clutches her heart. Oh my God, are you okay? I squeak, sounding nothing like a nurse. She points a shaking finger at the knitting. You just murdered it. No, I didn't. I grab the working yarn and tug, and her stitches start to fly apart. Holy. With a sob, she buries her eyes in her hands. You're going to drop all the stitches. That took me weeks. No, look. If you want to be a good knitter, you have to be a good unknitter. One eye emerges from behind her hand. Can't look. That's like gory. Blood and guts everywhere. Do you have a name? I ask, working quickly. It takes me about 60 seconds to remove the bad stitches, and then catch all the remaining ones on the needle again. Layla, she says from behind her hands. Look now, Layla. See? You only lost a half inch of knitting. I pass it back to her. Wow. She turns it over in her hands. Okay, that's pretty cool. She picks up the other needle and knits two stitches. Now, tell me what you mean about moving the yarn. I show her. Now, with that yarn in front, purl. She hesitates. You've got this. I mimic the right motion and give her the memory line I used to learn knitting. Come out the front door, grab your scarf. She puts the needle through and wraps it. Now duck out the back before the cat barfs. Oh my fucking God, she says, squinting at the needle. Worst rhyme ever. It worked, though. Where is the gratitude? Now, move the yarn to the back and get ready to knit. She does, and a few minutes later, she's holding her knitting up to the light and crowing about how great it looks. Like real ribbing. That's because it is. We talk knitting for a while longer, and then I'm surprised when Nurse Haley taps me on the back and says our time is up. Meet us out in the hallway, please, she says. Thank you, Layla tells me. I didn't get your name. It's Jess. Good luck with your... Is it going to be a sweater? I ask, although the knitted piece is really too small for that. A hat, she replies, and then the shape makes more sense. It's for my little brother. He loves Harry Potter, and these are Gryffindor colors. It's for Christmas. Oh, that's brilliant. He's going to love it. And you're almost there. This will be done way before Christmas. Tired eyes lift to mine. Has to, she says. And her gaze dares me to look away. I'm stage 4. Might not make it to Christmas. Just like that, I crumple inside. My exterior keeps going. I take her hand and give it a gentle squeeze. I call her by name and make eye contact and tell her I'll be thinking about her. I pick up my bag with the Play-Doh inside, and my feet carry me out the door. Half the nursing students are in the hallway already. They're bent over their clipboards, their pens flying over the page, their observations spilling forth. When I come to stand beside Violet, she's writing contusions on the inner arm. She sees me looking over her shoulder, and her head snaps up, clipboard hugged to her chest. What the hell? Are you copying me? Of course I'm not. But it wasn't until I saw Violet's handwriting that I remembered all the observations we were supposed to be making. I failed. Again. This realization is a second little bomb going off inside my chest. So even though Nurse Haley hasn't come out yet to speak to us, I turn and march down the hall, heading for the elevators. Where are you going? Violet calls after me. Class isn't over. I don't even turn to look. I can't, because there are tears spilling over now. tracking down my face. When I step into the elevator, it's already impossible to remember why I wanted any of this in the first place. Not only is nursing school hard, but sad things wait for me when it's over. Everyone I left behind on the ward is better prepared than I am. None of them are escaping the building like me. As I often do, I take the subway to my brother's apartment. That's my refuge. When Violet's lip curls once too often, I hide in the waterfront condo at dinner time. On the train, I open my nursing textbook in my face and hide behind it until the tears stop. That poor kid. Knitting her brother a hat in October in case she doesn't make it to December. Why? Crankiness makes sense. Jess. Jamie isn't home from work yet, but I let myself into the apartment with the spare key they gave me. He told me via text to get dinner started if I felt like it. And although I don't feel like it, I do it anyway. He and Wes are nice enough to let me come over and eat their food every other night, so I might as well contribute in any way I can. Not having money sucks. My bank account is like a horror movie. I can't check the balance without screaming. The student loans I took out allow me a certain amount for living expenses, but I'm being extra stingy with those funds, buying only the bare necessities. I had a friend in college who had a ton of cash left over from her loan because she couldn't be bothered to buy any textbooks, and she blew it on manicures and hair appointments. We all kept telling her it wasn't free money and that loans need to be repaid. She didn't listen, and now she's paying the price in the form of insanely high interest rates. I, on the other hand, am going to be smart about this. There's no such thing as free money. Anything extra, I'm keeping in my savings account and using to pay the sharks back. Though I suppose buying groceries for Jamie and Wes every now and then would probably make me less of a dick for eating all their food. I'm chopping up a green pepper at the counter when the front door creaks open. "In here," I call out. "How do you feel about fajitas?"
"I feel awesome about fajitas."
I freeze mid-chop. That's not Jamie's voice or Wes's.
Nope, it's J-Babe.
Blake looks delighted to see me as he lumbers into the kitchen. "Hi," I say, hoping my reluctance doesn't show on my face. I don't know if I can handle this man's ceaseless energy right now. Not when I'm feeling so low. I've encountered Blake too often for my comfort this month, which was inevitable given that I've taken to hiding out here because my roommate is unbearable. Blake practically lives in this condo. I honestly don't know how Wes and my brother haven't killed him yet. So the four of us have hung out a lot. Oddly enough, he hasn't hit on me. Not even once. I guess he was serious about the ball being in my court. Or maybe it's because Jamie and Wes are always around.
"You look hot enough to fuck."
Yup. Obviously the latter. The big lug wouldn't dream of saying something like that in front of his teammate and my brother. "You need to work on your conversation skills," I tell him.
"Nah, I make great conversation."
He wanders over to the counter and props one hip against it. Even slouched over like that, he still towers over me, and I can't help but eye the way his sweatpants ride low on his hips and admire every ripple on his chest under his faded gray t-shirt.
"And I mean it," he adds. "You look gloriously fuckable. Shall we retire to our chair?"
Despite myself, a laugh pops out. That makes his green eyes light up.
"A laugh? Oh yeah, I'm totally getting some tonight."
I resume my chopping. "I'm sorry to inform you that you're not. I'm just here to eat."
"Me too. I like eating. Food, but also other things. I'm a voracious eater, Jesse."
I snicker.
"Holy cannoli, another laugh? I'm on fire tonight."
He's so ridiculous. It's impossible not to smile. But my good humor doesn't last long. I've cut up enough peppers and now it's time to dice an onion. But the fake tears it brings to my eyes confuse my already depressed mind, and suddenly I'm blinking back real tears. I skipped class, I blurt out.
Abrupt subject change, Blake remarks.
I blink faster. Well, I didn't skip it entirely. I just left early, before Nurse Haley could call me out for being a screw-up in front of my fellow students.
Okay. Should I call the cops and report you?
Stifling a sigh, I set down the knife and meet his bewildered eyes. I didn't observe.
Jesus. Do you always talk in riddles?
I quickly explain myself. We were in the cancer ward. The kitty cancer ward.
Eek.
I know, right? And we were supposed to sit down with one of the patients and talk to them, but, you know, observe them at the same time for visible symptoms. The sigh slips out. I got the talking part down pat, but I totally dropped the ball on the observing. I didn't take any notes. Everyone else took notes, and then Nurse Haley wanted us to report our findings, and I just bailed. I was too embarrassed. I felt like such an idiot. I keep my gaze on the cutting board, because I'm yet again feeling embarrassed. I can't believe I'm spilling my guts to this man. A warm hand lands on my cheek, making me jerk in surprise. I raise my head and see Blake's somber gaze fixed on me.
You're not an idiot, Jess, he says quietly. You're one of the smartest people I know.
Yeah, I'm so smart I spent 20 minutes teaching a kid about knitting instead of doing the job I was supposed to do.
What was she like?
The question comes out of left field. What do you mean?
The kid you were talking to. What was she like?
Frustrated, I admit. She was knitting a hat for her brother and couldn't get the stitching right.
Why not? Does she just suck at knitting or were her hands too weak?
I think it over. No, her hands were steady. I mean, she had bruising on her wrists and the inside of her elbows from all the needles. But her grip was strong. I chew on my bottom lip. But she had dark circles under her eyes, too. So maybe she was too tired to knit. I smile. And she was kind of cranky.
Stage 3 cancer, 4? He asks.
4. Blake nods, his fingertips lazily tracing my jawline. I find myself leaning into the warmth of those big fingers.
Crankiness makes sense, he says. You see a lot of anger and irritability at the terminal stage.
My forehead wrinkles. How do you know that?
My grandpa died of colon cancer a few years back. He was a cranky son of a bitch by the end. The pain got to him, screwed with his head.
I think back to Layla, trying to remember if she'd shown any signs of pain. Her breathing hadn't sounded too stable, and she'd been so pale. And thin. So damn thin. My heart clenches at the memory.
Sounds to me like you observed plenty.
Blake's thumb teases my lips, and then he lightly pinches them.
Maybe next time you should write that shit down. Or at the very least, stick around for the debriefing, or whatever you call it in nursing school. And tell your teacher everything you just told me.
I bristle, but only for a second. He's right. I had observed. I had observed without even realizing it. And now I feel like an even bigger idiot.
Ah!
I groan. Why didn't I stay?
Panic?
He offers. Yes, panic. And that crushing feeling of inferiority that my awful roommate seems to instill in me. I saw Violet's clipboard and... Another groan slips out. She wrote a fucking essay, Blake, and it killed my confidence.
Violet? The evil roommate?
I nod. I've complained about her every time I've visited the condo, but I'm surprised Blake actually paid attention. He doesn't come off as someone who retains information, unless it relates to sex or hockey. She makes me feel like such a loser, I confess. She's just so smart. Scary smart. She spends all her free time with her nose buried in a textbook. I swear, she studies 24/7. I asked her if she wanted to study together, and she... My cheeks heat up. She laughed at me. Blake hops up on the countertop and rests his hands on his massive thighs.
I'm surprised the counter doesn't collapse under his hefty weight.
Well, that's your mistake right there, honey. You don't try to make friends through studying.
But that's all she does. This nursing program is literally the only thing we have in common.
No, it's not.
I roll my eyes. You know something about Violet that I don't?
I know something about college, he says with a shrug. Thing about college, Jesse, is that it's goddamn stressful.
I can't help but snort. Uh-huh. I'm sure you were so stressed at whatever party school you went to. All those exhausting frat parties. God, how did you ever survive? He wags a finger at me.
Well, aren't we judgy? I needed a C average to be eligible to play hockey. You think I kept that up without going to class? I went to class, dudette. I even wrote a few papers.
Typed them up and everything. Guilt pokes at me. I really do need to stop judging this guy. Sorry, I mumble. He waves off the apology.
Anyway, school means stress, and stress makes everyone a little bitchy.
So you're saying I should be patient with Violet?
I'm saying you should get trashed with her. Fuck studying. Take bitchy Betty to a bar and get lit. I guarantee you'll find some common ground if you both let down your guards.
I stare at him.
What?
That's not bad advice.
Course it's not. It's grade A wisdom.
I bite my lip again. What happens if we go to a bar? That's if she even agrees to it. And we've got nothing to talk about.
Nah, that won't happen. Text me the deets. I'll come along. People always have shit to say to me.
He's right about that. You're inviting yourself to my roommate bonding date? I say with a grin.
Why not?